Well, good morning again, friends. I want to start off, actually, because I forgot to pray. So why don't we go and have a prayer together? God, thank you for bringing us together this morning. There's so much going on in the world, so many fears about out there, and so many fears about what could happen just in our own lives. And so, God, we just ask you to be present with us. We ask you to continue to be here, because that is who you are. You're our way maker. You work with us. And so, God, wherever we are today, we know you're here. God, thanks for bringing us together. Hold our problems, encourage us, and allow this service to be a place where we can be refilled, encouraged, challenged, and to walk away a little bit different than how we came in. In your holy name we pray. Amen. Well, we are in the middle of a series called All In, and we're talking about what it means when we go fully on board, when we fully commit ourselves to something we believe in. And no, I'm not talking about your favorite sports team or that pair of sweatpants that you have kept around for 20 years and you just love and it has holes in it. It smells a little weird, but you love them all the same. There are things in our lives that we are all in about, but we're talking about in this series the things that can change our lives and change the world if we go all in, if we become fully committed to. And so for this series, we've been unpacking one verse. Now, there's other parts of Scripture that we've been using, but there's one verse that we're looking at all 4 weeks to try to unpack and understand. And so I want us to start off by reading this verse together. Here it is. It's from Mark chapter 20. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your mind, and with all your strength. Now, you may be familiar with this verse if you, grew up going to Sunday school or you have a Bible study. You've probably come across this. This is a famous passage that Jesus talks about. It's in every single gospel, and it's actually in Matthew twice, which is interesting. I'm wrong about that. This is in every single gospel, but it's another verse that's in Matthew twice. All right, we'll get there. But last week, we talked about the first word here. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart. And heart here is the word cardia. This is a reminder. This is not just feeling or affection. This is not just, the organ pumping in your chest. No, this is your passion, your conviction, your deep-set moral beliefs. This is what we were talking about last week. And that to love God with all of your heart is not to just be affectionate or to be extra loving to God. No, it means to be a person who is deeply all in when it comes to your convictions and your ideals and your deep set beliefs. And so we talked about that. And this week we're moving on to the next part of the verse. And the next part of the verse, it talks about this word here, being. Love the Lord your God with all of your being. Now, depending on the Bible translation you use, I use the Common English Bible. It's not super common, actually, ironically, but it's kind of newer, and it's United Methodist approved. But a lot of translations don't use the word being here. They use the word, anyone familiar? Soul, that's right. So usually gets translated as soul. It's actually on our bulletin. We used a different translation on the bulletin cover. It says soul there. And the reason that different translations translate this with different words is because there is no direct English translation of the word that's here. And so different translators have to figure out the best word to actually understand what Jesus is saying here. So today we're going to explore this a little bit. The word is actually this, psuche. It means, this is the root word for psychology. Now here's the interesting thing. When a psychologist doesn't study souls, right? No, a psychologist will help you with your identity, with your mind, with stuff you're going through. And so you can kind of see here the challenge of how this word doesn't exactly translate. And so all sorts of words kind of fit, but none of them perfectly fit. So we could talk about this as being, or your soul, or your life, or your identity. And what's fascinating about this is in the Bible, it's kind of split. The two most common translations are soul and life. It's about a 50-50 spread. If you look up this word in a dictionary, you're going to see half the time it's translated as life, and half the time it's translated as soul. So it's kind of all of this. Another way of understanding psuche is like your life force, your personality, your essence of who you are. It's kind of like your, it's like who you are, but it's the thing that powers powers your life, your body. Another way to think about this, if your body is the hardware, your suitcase is your software. You know, if you have a laptop or a MacBook or something, or your cell phone, you know, I've got mine here. If you have a cell phone and it doesn't have any software loaded on it, it's useless. It's the software that actually makes it useful. It's the same thing with our lives. It's the thing inside of us that puts up, you know, energy and passion and interest and personality into what we are. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about suke. Now, for the purposes of the rest of the sermon, I'm going to use the word life. And when I use the word life here, I am not going to use the word as you being physiologically a living being. I'm going to use it in a sense of kind of a larger idea, your life or life force or who you are and everything that you embody. That's what I mean by life. And so we're going to use this word just for the simplicity's sake because I don't want to say all those words every single time. Okay, so usually though, when we talk about life, we talk about it in kind of cliche phrases. You know, I feel like every once in a while I walk through a hobby store and, you know, they have all these decorative signs that you can put up around your office or your home or your bathroom or something. And one of those sayings is, you know, sometimes live your best life now, you know. So some of you know, that's like your motto, you know, or it might be YOLO. Teenagers, you know, use this one, right? No, they're like, nope, that one's gone. All right. You only live once, so live life, yeah, same thing. Okay, so another one you might hear is, you know, when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. Yeah, so it's about how do you handle adversity in your life. Another one is, Mama used to say, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. We have these cliche sayings about our lives, and yet when I think about my life, and maybe you've seen this about your life, what I've realized is this. That we're always looking for something more in our lives. Very few of us are satisfied with this. Very few of us look at our lives and we think, I've arrived. And probably, you know, it's probably not, if you do feel that way, all right, we get, there's another sermon for that. But a lot of us, it's not that we're not satisfied, it's that we think our lives somehow aren't good enough, that we're lacking something in our lives, that our lives would be good if only fill in the blank here. For some of us, that might be something as simple as losing a few pounds. If only I, you know, physically was different, my life would be different. Or if I was more successful, my life would be better. Or if I had a more impressive home, my life would be better. Or if my kids loved me more, called me twice a week instead of once a week, you know, my life would be better. Or if everyone loved me more, my life would be better. Or if I could protect my home and my family better, you know, my life would be better. We constantly feel like there's just somehow not enough in here. If only we had a little bit more. And by the way, this is how marketing works, is more and more smart marketing targets our desire to have better lives. No longer is it just, here's the information and here's the data. Now it's, here's something to get you that life you always want. And if that sounds a little dramatic, I've actually brought a commercial with me today without the endorsement of this car company, but check out this commercial.
We gotta see.
So you might see that and think, well, that wasn't so bad, right? Well, think about it. There's no warranty information. There's no mileage. There's no price tag on it. There's no information about the car. What they did in that commercial was 100% selling you on a better life. And I've actually taken some time to unpack this commercial so that we can all understand what's happening inside of us. So they have this first line. We got a Subaru to give him some adventure. And the him in there is their little one, is their little kid, which is, so this phrase, you know, sounds really nice, give him some adventure. This is code for, to appeal to your parenting. Are you sheltering your kid? Are you going to be a parent that makes your kid have a boring life? Get this car, and your kid will have an adventurous life. You know, like, it's like, are you a bad parent? So we got that. We got a little bit of, oh, if my life was, I would be a better parent if I got this car. All right, then we have this. And then she says, to reconnect and be together, which is code for your relationship needs some work, right? Oh, you're right. We do need to reconnect. We feel a little distant lately. Oh, man, my marriage needs some work. Oh, am I a good spouse? Oh, man, if we get this car, maybe we can reconnect. Okay, so we have something better about your life. Then they say, his greatest adventure is just beginning, which means, do you want to actually equip your kid to have a good future? Because the adventure is just beginning, but he's going to have a normal life if you don't get this car. And nobody wants their kid to have a normal life, right? All right, so you have that. Oh, no, I'm gonna not provide the things I need for my kid to have an adventurous life if I don't get this car. All right, and then it ends with this. The tagline, go where love leads you. We don't want your money. We just want you to go where love leads you and empty your pocketbook and have an adventurous life with us. You know, like this is the funny how this all works, right? Like it's meant to appeal to us that your life as it is could be better. It's not enough as it is. It needs to be better. And so we have this mentality. Now, if you're a super owner, by the way, and your life is actually amazing because of this, like let me drive around in it or borrow it or something. I need to know if I've picked a bad example here. All right, but this is how a lot of purchases get made. But you know what else has influenced purchasing power today? And this is a little bit of a sideline, but it'll take us full circle here. Is today, not only do we have commercials like this that appeal to our emotion, our lives, and how we can have better lives, but we also have more access to reviews than ever before. So if you want to go ahead and buy something, you can look to see how someone else has experienced that product before you buy it too. So is anyone else here like obsessed with looking up reviews before you make a purchase? Okay, so like half of us are smart purchasers, okay? Teasing you. All right, but I obsess over this stuff. The other day I was looking. I found I don't even know how I found this. I found a grill you microwave, and it's not even in like good branding. It came in like a loose cardboard box, and it has Chinese inscriptions still on it. But I was like, but I put it in the microwave, and I can make a panini. But I looked at it because it had great reviews, and so I bought it because of the reviews. So I don't know if that's the greatest way to make purchases, but it seems to work for me so far. Especially if you want to get extra stuff you don't really need. But this helps because what ends up happening with a review is that reviews help you know what's true. Because it's not just advertising that catches your eye. It's not just selling you a story or how your life could be better. No, someone else has gotten their hands on this thing, and they're telling you how their life was when they got it, whether this thing was durable, whether it actually worked, whether it was helpful, whether it looked like the advertising. The reviews help us know what we're actually getting, whereas marketing is just trying to appeal to some kind of emotion or sense that we can make our lives better. Reviews help us know what's real. And we do this with all sorts of different items. We do this with cars, and we do this with television. We do this with purchases. We get reviews of people we work with and businesses we work with. And yet, there's a place in life where we don't really look at the reviews. And that's, strangely, life. It's strangely life itself. Because if you think about it, there's a lot of people on the earth who have lived and grown old and died, and many of them have left behind their reviews of life. The one-star decisions that they wish they could take back, the five-star decisions that they were really glad that they made. And while not all reviews have the same consensus, if you see themes developing, you generally can know what then about life is the best part of life. And yet, so many of us ignore the reviews when it comes to life. A book came out recently called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. And it was written by this lady, Bronnie Ware. And she's this Australian nurse, and she sat with these palliative care people. And as they were in the last weeks of their lives, she asked them about their biggest regrets or things they would have done differently in life. And so she ended up, after having hundreds of these conversations, she saw themes. She saw commonalities between their life reviews. And the commonalities, she ended up finding 5 major themes when it came to people's regrets about their life, when it came to their reviews about life. And here are the 5. The first one that she found that came up a lot was, I wish I had had the courage to live a true life to myself, not the life others expected of me. Which is fascinating because so many of us, we end up trying to be a person that fits a mold that somebody else expects. And then people reach the end of their lives, and they wish that they hadn't wasted their time trying to be what someone else wanted them to be and just been who they were. That breaks my heart. The second regret that a lot of people had was, I wish I hadn't worked so much. I wish I hadn't worked so much. This is one that is challenging for me. I have memories in my life of, especially in kind of church plant years, where I didn't have a relationship. I was a single guy, and I had no reason to go home. And so I have these memories of being in the office one evening and finally running out of work. And I remember looking down, and everybody was gone. Everybody was out with their families, and I was in this church office looking around like, oh, what do I do with myself? I didn't even know what to do with personal time. And so this has been a journey for me. But people wish at the end of their lives they hadn't worked so hard. The third one is, I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. A lot of us, it's either fear or we feel like we've got an expectation to hold those things in. People left things unsaid and then regretted it at the end of their lives. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. My girlfriend Beth, last night, she came to the service last night, and she called me later, and she said on her drive home, she called one of her best friends that she hasn't been in touch with for a long time, and she's been talking about how it feels like that friendship has been kind of drifting away. And so, what I was excited about is she actually got something out of my sermon. So I was like, all right, it's not my idea, but yeah, I'll take it. And the last one that they regretted was, I wish that I had let myself be happier. I let myself be happier. Let myself actually be present. Let myself actually enjoy my life for where it is and not enjoy it if only I had had more or something else or something different in my life. And so those are the five biggest regrets. And, you know, if you guys need to take a picture of that, it'll be up for another second. When it comes to purchases, we read the reviews. But when it comes to life, you know, we don't do a good job of reading the reviews. Here's the thing. Bronnie Ware, the nurse, was not the only person to gather this information. There's a lot of this out there from tens of thousands of years of human civilization. And here's the reality is even our Bible and even Jesus speaks directly to this idea of how do you live a good life? How do you live a full life? And so here's our passage that we're looking at to expound upon this exact idea that Jesus is talking about. And so Jesus, in Matthew chapter 13, he says this, all who want to save their lives will lose them, but all who lose their lives because of me will find them. Why would people gain the whole world to lose their lives? What will people give in exchange for their lives? So, first reading, kind of a glance of this, you know, you may have read this in your Bible or in a Sunday school class or grown up with this or came across it at some point, and it almost, you know, it's hard to take away, like, what's the point here? How does this help me? This is not something that, you know, you put on your crafts on the wall, right? This, like, what does this actually mean? And, you know, for the longest time as a kid, I think I read this, and I thought he was talking about being a martyr, you know, like, hey, if you die for me, then you'll have true life. You know, this is, I thought, well, no, you're gonna have to sell me a little harder than that, Jesus, you know? That's not super encouraging. But going a little deeper, there's actually a deeper meaning to this that we don't catch on a cursory view. And the reason for that is because the word here, life, is the same word we were just talking about. It's suke. All who want to save their suke, their being, their essence, their life force, will lose them. We're not talking about physiological life here. No, we're talking about who you are. This topic is different than we read because of the English. All who want to save up their lives, make it about themselves, focus on themselves, just get as much as they can. Everyone who makes their life all about themselves, you're not going to have a full life if your life is all about you. That's what the first line's saying. The second line says, but all who lose their lives, all who lose their suke, all who give away their life because of me, finds them. Essentially, Jesus is saying here is people who are generous with their lives, who give away their lives, who spend time and invest in people and invest in relationships. These are people who end up, even though they're giving up of themselves, they somehow find themselves more alive. And this, there's a little irony to this. There's a little irony to this. So maybe you're saying, I'm still not totally following, Chris. Well, we have the disadvantage of, again, this being in English. In the original language, the first hearers of this would have heard something else. See, the word suke, the root word of suke, is the word for breathe. It's the verb breathe. And so that may not seem like it has a connection, but if you think about it, breathing and living life have a lot of commonalities. See, when you breathe, you take a breath, and then you have to exhale. But imagine if we felt there was a scarcity of air in this room, and we were all fighting for air, and we were all trying to kind of save it up and hoard it for ourselves. We'd probably do something like this. And we try to keep it in our lungs, right? Like, if we were all fighting to get the air in the room, that's what essentially we'd be trying to do. Which sounds ridiculous. It sounds silly. If we were all doing that right now, it would be like a skit. And yet, this is the idea Jesus is trying to say here. When people try to hoard their lives and their life force and who they are and their essence and try to keep it to themselves, it's like you trying to capture all the air in the room. So someone can live their life and they can make it about themselves and sort of like, this air is mine. And then I want more. And then I don't want anyone else to mess with mine. So I'm going to get even more. And I'm going to focus on myself. And if you live this way, eventually, you're going to pass out. Because even though you filled your air with lungs, you will lose air. You will not be able to breathe. This is the ironic part. No, and for those of us who exhale, you suddenly find yourself able to have more air. Now, sometimes we consider life as if it's this quantity that there's only so much, and so we have to save it up and guard it and keep it to ourselves, and yet Jesus is inviting us to exhale. Now, sometimes I get so excited when it comes to sermons and it comes to biblical research and diving in and Christianity that I love the big picture stuff. I have to work really hard to help with practical stuff. And so I want to make sure that with this one that we bring it home, some practical ideas here. Because just like, oh yeah, what would Chris say today? Well, he told us that we should leave and then we just need to exhale a lot. We need to breathe a lot this week. Okay, well, that's not exactly what we're trying to say here. And so here's a way of understanding this. In my experience, you see this kind of behavior. You see someone who gives out of their life, who exhales their life. You see this especially when an adult invests in a young person. The first example I can think of is like a coach. A really good coach will have an incredible impact. In fact, there's this quote I saw walking around Hobby Lobby the other day, and it was just like this nice little, I almost bought it, and then I actually grabbed it to come purchase it, and then I forgot it, and then I was too lazy to go back, so sorry, we'll get it on the screen instead. So it said this: a good coach can change a game, a great coach can change a life. And here's the deal, we know you may have had this coach. We've watched movies about coaches like this. You know, when you watch a sports movie, it's not to replay the game. No, you could just go watch the game. No, when you watch a sports movie, it's about how a coach often, there's one out in the theaters right now with Ben Affleck, but I haven't seen it, and I probably shouldn't even mention that because it probably has a bunch of swear words in it. So anyways, don't watch that one, kids. But this is what our sports movies are like. It's about how much a coach can invest in and pour out their life in to make a difference in players. Like, a great coach is not just about winning the game. A great coach will help influence those players' lives, give them attention, give them invest in them, and challenge them in different ways that don't even relate to sports, but just to help them be better people. Like, this is a great coach because that coach gives of his or her life. It exhales life, who doesn't just keep it to themselves, but invest it in others. And there's all sorts of examples like this. You know, maybe you've had a great grandpa or grandma. Now, sometimes the average, view of a grandparent is, you know, they love seeing the kids around, they're sweet to them, they give them presents. Yeah, there's grandma or grandpa. That's kind of like the bar. That's where the bar is set. And some of us have grandparents that just kind of, they're just nice, they're fine. But then you might have had a grandparent who invested in you. And that's a whole different level. A grandparent who was constantly checking in and seeing how you were doing and asking you how you were and investing in your life by giving of themselves. That's a whole different level when you have someone like that in your life. By the way, I had a conversation with someone a few years ago, and this guy had a grandson. I was asking about him, and I said, "Do you and your grandson get along?" And he said, "Well, you know, I like him okay, but he's not really interested in me." I thought, oh, that's an interesting comment. Well, what do you mean by that, Grandpa? And he said, well, you know, I try to talk to him, but he's more interested in his Game Boy. And I said, well, that's not a Game Boy. No, I'm just kidding. And he said, he's more interested in his Game Boy. And I said, well, maybe he's more interested in the Game Boy because he you know, he's not 100% sure that you're bought in and invested in him. You know, maybe if he knew you were invested in him, eventually you'd be just as interesting as the Game Boy. And so there's sometimes this challenge of, like, we feel like, well, they should go first. Or, you know, they didn't show me interest. Well, see, given your life, when someone gives of their life, you know, sometimes it takes time before you get anything back, but you just give it because you're giving your life. You're not going to run out of life to give, not in that sense. Another example is a teacher who shows up. We've all had the teachers who show up, and they're just doing their job, and they're just going through the motions. And then we've had those teachers who are giving of themselves, who give of their life, who are there to make an impact, who invest in their students, who, when a student's not flourishing, they mourn that student. They hurt for that student. We've all had a teacher who cares, and kids can tell the difference between those teachers. And we can tell the difference between those people too. Now, this is, by the way, this is what it looks like for a church to have a really healthy kids and youth ministry too. This applies to our own church, not just sports, not just school. See, the biggest factor in young people growing up to be Christians as young adults, the biggest factor is not their Sunday school education. It isn't their biblical literacy. It isn't their church attendance. It's not even their zeal for faith. Because, and guys, what'll happen is you'll see this with a lot of your peers. You'll know people who are Christians now, and you'll graduate from high school, and you'll move on to the next stage of life, and 50% of teenagers walk away from faith completely. Like, done. And not because anything tragic happens, just because it wasn't something that was personally meaningful to them. And how it becomes personally meaningful, study after study after study has shown, is when young people have adults who compliment their parents and who invest in them. And what I mean in the church context, it's faithful adults, it's Christian adults, who know them by name, who care about them, who invest in them. That is the highest marker that shows if somebody will be a Christian and have a faith of their own after high school. That is the strongest correlation, is if they have someone in their life who's invested in them and who's a Christian who models that. That is the biggest thing. And so I'm having conversations with Joanne, our kids ministry director, and Erica, our, you know, associate pastor and youth director, and constantly our conversations are, how can we get more adults to invest in our young ones? And I'm using the word invest here because it's a mental shift. Because a lot of us grew up in church environments where it was Sunday school, where you were just teaching something, or you just stepped in a classroom and you'd see them once a week. And what we're finding is the churches that are healthiest, especially when it comes to our young people, they develop a culture of adults who pour into kids and pour into teenagers so that they know their name, they show up at their games, they can reach out to parents, they know the families, sometimes they'll call up and just check how they're doing. This is that kind of pouring out of yourself makes all of the difference for a young person. And so as a church, we're going to have to make a shift from Sunday school to basically church, ecclesia, community, gathering of young Christians who we want to invest in. You know, this is what God's asking of us, to give our lives. Now, we use a curriculum called Orange, and Orange exists by combining the light of the church and the home of the heart of the home. And so they say the red and the yellow creates orange. And so it's helping churches realize that you have to partner with families instead of just offer a class for kids. And so this is the philosophy. And they have this really interesting phrase. They say this: count the weeks so you can make the weeks count. Count the weeks so you can make the weeks count. And here's what they're referring to. In this jar are 936 marbles. And these 936 marbles represent one marble per week of childhood. So when you're born until you're 18, you have 936 weeks of life until you're an adult. And so that seems like a lot, you know? Here's a one-week-old, two-week-old. You know, I'm grabbing four of them now. There's a month of life. It feels like you've got a ton. You've got a lot of time. But then here's some perspective here. See, the weeks keep going. And while this might be birth, by the time you're nine years old, okay, this is a nine-year-old. That's how much time you have left. And parents, I think this might be a little emotional, so I'm sorry. All right. If you have a 9-year-old, there's the rest of childhood. Right? You're half done. You're half done with that influence. You'll know them as adults, but there's this particular kind of influence that you can have during childhood. Okay. By the time you go to high school, we're here. There's our high schoolers. That's how much childhood you guys got left. I hope that doesn't create any pressure or anxiety or anything. All right. Then, you learn to drive. We get to that point. All right. And we're at that much left, childhood. And they say, count the weeks so you can make the weeks count. Because they understand this. They understand that you don't have forever to make an impact. You don't have forever to make an impact. And that's true of our kids and our teenagers, but it's also true of life, in general. That you might be, you know, some of you are older than 18, which means you've used up one of these. But in life, we might, if we're lucky, get 4 or 5 of these total in our lives. And some of you are in jar 4 or 5, right? No pressure. What we're saying here, you don't have forever to make an impact. And what Jesus is saying here is, Jesus is saying that so often what we do is we hoard our lives. We try to keep this. We try to keep it to ourselves. Make it about us. And if we focus on ourselves, then maybe we'll keep the marbles. And so we do this. And yet, no matter how tightly you hold on to them, every week, another one's gone. Every week. No matter how tightly you hold on to it, what Jesus essentially is saying when he's giving this teaching is, are you going to hold tightly to your life and be surprised when you find it gone? Or are you going to have some initiative and instead of finding your week gone, be someone who instead offers it up to others? Because it's going to go either way. And our decision is, do we hold it and then somehow act surprised when it's gone? Or do we give it? Hold or give. These are options. And I'm not just talking about kids or students. This is our lives we're talking about. And so next week, we're going to talk about some key ways that you can invest in this church to make a difference. To use your life. We don't want to just have you come here and just feel like this is a place to just come and then go. No, church is a place to help people inhale and exhale and live together and breathe together and do life together and invest in one another. Not just because it's asked of us or there's an obligation, but because Jesus says, this is what full life looks like. This is what the best kind of life looks like. But here's the thing. That's next week. So that's one of your marbles. So you've got to figure out this week what you're going to do with this one. Who are you going to give it to? What are you going to give it to? And are you going to go all in when it comes to your one precious set of marbles? Would you pray with me? God, we are grateful for the gift that you've given us of life. And we ask you to please help us not hoard it to ourselves. Not make it all about us. Help us to exhale, to give away what we've been given. In your holy name we pray. Amen.